again, David Simon and Ed Burns with the fourth season of The Wire. This theme was education. And it's particularly apt that Ed is here doing the commentary with me because it really is Ed's season in the sense that he taught for 7 years in the city school system, and this really is rooted in his experience.
Your nail gun, DeWalt 410.
Yeah, the trouble is we leave it in the trunk for a while, need to step up and use the bitch. The battery don't hold up, you know?
Yeah, the cordless will do that. You might want to consider the powder actuated.
Ed, what were the fundamental themes of the season that you wanted to try to convey?
The first one, like you said, is education. We've established the first three seasons who the guys are in the corner, and this season was to look where they came from. We took four kids. Every classroom has a unique mix of kids, but they sort of all define themselves eventually in the end. And we picked four of those stereotypical type characters and brought them together in this little team. And then we watched them in this first episode as children, and then we'll watch their journey as it goes on from childhood.
For my money, she handles recoil better than the Simpson or the P-3500.
And to start the season, of course, in our teaser, we tried for a scene that is an allegory or a metaphor for the coming season, and we played the salesman being an educator of sorts, and Snoop Pearson being a good student.
Motherfuckers, get up, man. You like a pinball. Whip your way.
I think she's really matured from when we first found her last year. She carries this scene with both wisdom and amusement and a little light in her eye.
I'm going to go with this right here, man. How much I owe you?
$669 plus tax.
This was a scene where there was a lot of dialogue for her. We had allowed her to be a little bit off the page in the earlier season, but here was the moment where we really said to her, you're going to be an actor, you got to get on book. And she did. She really rose to the occasion.
She did. I think that the script supervisor would argue with you on that point, but eventually she did get there. Yeah.
It was Claire Cooperwaith's first day at the job because Kristen Moore had moved on. And so her first day and first scene was encountering Felicia.
Who she soon became very good friends with, but who at first was like, oh, my God.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. What show have I started working on? So you were talking about the four kids. Did the kids that you sort of conceived of, did they represent anyone in particular in your teaching experience?
Not really, because the classroom always has these same characters. They're ubiquitous. And there's other characters. We did do a class clown this time, but there's always the kid who's the dirty child. There's always the kid who's the hustler. And there's always the kid who's the wannabe gangster. And there's always that kind of quiet, cool kid that...
14-year-olds from Baltimore City, who I thought did a beautiful job, and really the theme sort of resonated with that sort of cusp of adulthood sense of the season. Karen Thorson, our post-production producer, who works on the cut of the credit sequence.
Seven and counting. All of them caught on the wire. We're not above the corners yet, but we...
One of the struggles with the new season, since you're coming back after a year or more sometimes on the wire, is to engage the story and at the same time try to acquire the exposition you need to get the story started without it being story-killing, I guess. It's always a trick.
There's a lot of pipe you have to lay. I think this is very elegant this year.
But he's a babe in the woods when it comes to this right here. I was proud to be chasing those Barksdales, but
this episode is very seamless. Maybe because we figured out how to use the detail room to our advantage. I don't know what it was.
We get 6 or 7 seasons on this sucker, we probably would have gotten it down to a science. We would have figured this show out eventually.
Well, we made the board a character, which I thought was cool.
That's true. The board became, you know, it originated with Prez and his sense of perfection.
All this is from the Barksdale money trail. We've been running down all the paper we pulled out of
the detail office is actually designed to match the interior of that old State Highway Administration building down on Clinton Street. It does approximate the interior. All the actual interior of that building is rotted out. We only use the exterior on occasion when we have to depict it. But it has that sense of state office, ancient bureaucratic misery, doesn't it?
Fearless heart. It does, and it provides a lot of different angles to shoot from, so it has an interest there.
Yeah.
It is a place where you can go die, as we know.
That's right, production-wise. Now, when you did wiretaps, were you always off-site, Ed?
Yeah, normally you go off-site, an apartment, a warehouse, a building. You run your wires in there, and you get a table, a couple chairs, a couple cots, and a filing cabinet, and away you go.
Is an election? Who's running?
And I think I can. Shit, I don't think we can take...
I remember we ran one wire. We thought we were really slick. We went into an apartment not far from the suspect, and in comes the janitor, and he sees us there with all our equipment laid out. I thought, well, there goes that wiretap. To the guy's credit, he never tipped anything, and it was a beautiful thing.
That is a beautiful thing. Even among black voters. This scene, we were trying to approximate Tommy D'Alessandro the Younger, Tommy the Younger, who was mayor of Baltimore when the Baltimore riots hit in 1968. And I think it took a little bit out of him. He decided to leave after one term in 71. He had the political name of the D'Alessandros, and he had the political future. But he decided he would rather be an attorney and leave it behind and spend more time with his family, and he basically opted out. So we were trying to honor him.
Don't ever let him forget it.
No, indeed.
We tried to get an actor that looked a little bit like him, and we played his moment, even though we didn't quite call him. We called him Tommy, but I don't think we gave him the last name, D'Alessandro.
And speaking of honoring people, the lieutenant, we're honoring all those guys in Homicide who built houses while they were supposed to be working.
Right.
Yeah, blueprints, the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Never seen a beach house so fine.
Think so?
The things that seem more extreme on the wire, that people wouldn't believe in terms of the bureaucratic dysfunction in various institutions, sometimes we underplay that, actually.
We do. You know, the truth is not what it seems.
Oh, no problem. Me and Lester, we'll cover for you on that.
Yeah.
No problem.
God is not a second-rate novelist, as mm-hmm. Richard Price often
absolutely.
Tells us. It is a nice-looking house.
It is. A beach house. Buzz Bazzura would like that. Yeah.
Shout out to Buzz. I don't think any show has emphasized the actual paperwork more than we have. And probably no show will ever again.
That little bit right there goes into the fifth season.
Yeah. That's right.
Look at this.
Music coming from this car is by Dead Meadow. Name it. Art rock band. A young man by the name of Jason Simon is the songwriter, singer, guitarist. I have to throw that shout out.
Mm-hmm.
He is, in fact, related to me.
Yeah, you know, man, Patrice been a guy for a long time.
This is up at Midtown, this area where we shot a lot of the season. Is actually being renovated, ironically, because it's near the train station. And so the one thing in Baltimore that works, people who could catch the train to Washington and commute viably. But yeah, when we were over in East Baltimore, it was rugged.
It surely was.
This also was J.D. Williams' season, wasn't it?
It was. He came a long way, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it was... for a guy who had killed one of the most likable characters first season, been basically a straight street soldier for his entire run on the show, he was very evocative, and there was a lot of sympathy for him by the end.
Yeah, you could see him. From first season to fourth season, you could see him become an actor.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Capture the nuances of his character. And speaking of character.
Yeah. I love just dressing him in a suit, I have to say.
He is conflicted.
This is the actual City Hall in Baltimore. This is the Rotunda. It is a beautiful building from the outside. They've kind of carved up the inside architecture on some of the floors, which is not so great.
Lieutenant went upstairs already.
It's quite an edifice. I think we love doing this on the show a lot more than other dramas. We love referencing the past. If we have a little gentle way to tease the past. So there was all the humor last season about would you sleep with a guy to sleep with a girl, and all the teasing he took, and here it comes again.
You'd fuck a guy for a chance to fuck a hot broad. You don't think that makes you a faggot or nothing?
Hot as balls. Was that you?
I have to credit that to my cousin from New York. Mm-hmm. That's sort of a New York phrase. It sounded good coming out of Dominic's mouth, didn't it? Yes, yes. It's all Shakespearean, if you pretend it to be.
8 months.
Dominic Lombardozzi, as well as JD, have a great comedic streak that they can touch into.
Yeah.
Are you ready to take a bullet for the mayor of Baltimore?
I think just, you know, in all of his work, I mean, going back to Oz and everything, I think JD has a real light, sort of quotidian humor. And Dominic's pacing with Seth Gilliam is just amazing.
Mm-hmm. He has those looks.
He said he. Now here's my mayor. This is the guy I would want to hang around with.
Maybe tomorrow.
He has the feel of a big city mayor, don't you think?
He turns around and calls.
He wears it well.
Absolutely. I love the feel of on camera, off camera, you know, that which is sort of the political theater of it. I like how credible somebody is once he's not pretending to be the public politician. I think Aiden has it as well as Carchetti, but I think Glenn Turman, he reminds me of certain Baltimore politicians.
That lost ball and high grass motherfucker Carchetti needs to get used to life in the wilderness.
He's gonna have to retie that tie.
Downtown areas, but your communities here on the east side. We stand or we fall together, and I'm here today to ask for the chance to stand with you. I thank you for your time. Questions? Yes, ma'am.
Is it the Salisbury steak for lunch today, or is they doing tacos?
I think that's an Emmy right there, I have to say. I'm not kidding. That was so real, it was terrifying.
Residential towers with waterside retail space and restaurants that grow Baltimore.
Being the challenger from the outside, the backbench councilman who's trying to run against an incumbent. For his commitment. Bill Zorzi was talking about how he covered campaigns like that, where you just know it's going nowhere. And you're trapped at these horrible events that are just not, gleaning anything for the candidate.
Yeah, I don't think he got any votes in that room that time.
I want to thank you and your administration for making this next stage of redevelopment for Baltimore's Harbor a reality. You talk about vision.
This is actually shot in Inner Harbor East, which is the great development speculation area of the last 10 years, I guess.
Yeah, and these are the gangsters that we do the best.
Right, these are the real players, right? Pandemic! And here come our kids.
What up, Nat?
Hey, yo, what up?
What you got?
Nah, it's just a story.
What's
about
the magazine, Ed?
I think that's Don Diva.
700 years?
Yeah.
Read this shit, son.
It's calling us dead, man.
It's the the Time or the Newsweek or the Vanity Fair of the gangster world?
Yeah, I think it's gone national, too. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
It's a growth industry.
Hey, B.
The art department, I thought, did a wonderful job. We really emphasized that the political signage should start significant. You should see it. You know, there's a campaign going on. And then it should increase to a crescendo right at the election. And then it should start to yellow and fade after the election sequence this season. So that becomes a recurrent theme in all of our outdoor shots.
Yeah, I particularly like the shot where you see Omar in a later episode come out, tear down a sign.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. That was an ad-lib, and it was just beautiful.
If it wasn't for his pops, I wouldn't even bother. Yo! Make sure you come early tomorrow, because it ain't always...
Now, you've often said that teaching middle school, and then I guess you taught high school after that, that it was the toughest job you had those 7 years, and you spent 20 as a Baltimore police.
I just want to make sure we're still okay for that.
And this TV producing gig is no easy shakes.
Too. And they're great kids, and their loss is just stunning.
No matter. You got bacon on both sides.
But you just keep coming back. Extremely rewarding.
Yeah.
Chris, please.
Absolutely.
I got you covered.
I remember the first couple years you were at Hamilton, you had... one of the homicide actors, I was with Clark Johnson, come out to talk to the kids. You arranged that.
Chris.
And we got, like, the slightest little taste of just how... It was wonderful in a way, but they were very disassociative of whatever reality Clark was trying to convey about the film industry.
But this sequence coming up here with the vacant house, this was our effort to get the murder rate down in Baltimore, hoping that the guys would see this as a way.
If they don't, right, no if they body, don't find the bodies, there is no murder. The other thing about this scene is, I remember you sent me a note saying they should be wearing gloves, and I forgot, and then we shot it, and they weren't wearing gloves, and we came to the conclusion deeper into the season, as you sort of knew from jump, that there was just going to be too much trace evidence if they weren't wearing gloves on these murders. So that's a reshoot. Just to put the gloves on, that was a reshoot for us. Be still.
Yeah, you scan away the bird. And this is a thing that I think most kids in the city used to do. I know when I did this when I was growing up.
Yeah.
Catching pigeons.
Serious, man. This bird could be worth like $300-$400.
Think of please.
This is the innocence of childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same all over.
And that's a homer. And then it's white. So that makes it a homer, right?
That's about as close as we got that pigeon.
And that was close. I was surprised watching it.
Right, we waited a long time on that pigeon. Eh, that's it. We should name these actors.
The fuck is wrong with you throwing bottles and shit, huh? You just cost us cash money, you know that.
Yo, I ain't done nothing.
Alito, his name on. Alito McCollum.
Jermaine, as Dookie.
Jermaine Crawford, right? And Maestro Harrell,
right,
as Randy.
Tristan is Michael.
Tristan Wiles is Michael.
Yo, we stinking like rat fart.
There you go. They carried the season for us.
Each one found his character and just gave a stunning performance.
Y'all acting like little bitches.
Yeah.
Yo, Clark, got him upside his head. Only because I didn't want to get too close and touch the dirty motherfucker, but it came out with AIDS or some shit like that.
Dookie fight like a bitch, yo.
Sometimes writing this dialogue for kids that young, I feel shame. I go and apologize to their parents.
It's the way I talk.
I'm good, I gotta go.
And I think that we did capture, besides the foul language, is the underlying humanity that exists between them, that forms this little group, which eventually would all be torn apart.
Yeah. I came to regret scenes that we were obligated to write this season. That, you know, you would find yourself writing something so sad about those four kids. You really felt as if you wanted to go back and somehow fix it on the page, which would have, I guess, been unfixing it in a weird way.
Bowles, I knew she wasn't coming back the way they tore up her
family. I think their trajectories are pretty well set at a very early age.
Four in science.
Man at the door. No
system. And I don't think too much can step in between that arc.
Something changes his mind.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, you know, there are some victories here and there, but the odds are unlikely. And that's the unfair thing, how unlikely the odds are.
All right, I'll be right down.
It's Tyreka Freeman of the corner fame. And that is the great Marcia Donnelly, who is our assistant principal. It's Toots Duval, who has one of the most authentic Baltimore accents in our cast.
Even going to try to pronounce it.
Here's another actor who really got a chance to step up fourth season.
Well, they're with us. I'm principal here.
New in math.
I won't have my certificate until next year. But with the rest,
there's been a lot of talk on the internet and stuff that Przybylowski's arc is you, Ed. That was your first season arc. And that's not really the case, is it?
Not at all. I was a little bit older in the classroom.
In the city.
Marcia Donnelly. Assistant principal.
It's an acting job, first and foremost. So you have to go in with the idea that you're a boxer, and you get the first punch in and knock the kids off balance. Prez went in with the idea of being a teacher and got knocked off balance and struggled his whole year, as most young teachers do. You know, it's a struggle no matter who's in the classroom.
Jimmy, come on in.
Dominic West still doesn't salute correctly. But he's still good looking.
I know I offered when I first came over here. And I know you ran...
He does slouch and have the general contempt of a veteran officer, though. He manages that, I have to say.
He does.
Yeah. He refuses to play the exalted cop in any moment.
Thanks for the offer, though.
The other great Baltimore accent in the cast, that's the real Jay Landsman.
You don't think I...
As Lieutenant Mello. Talk about the journey towards being an actor, you know?
Absolutely. Really softened. Got into it.
For him?
Yeah.
Yo, Popo, man, Popo, shut it down.
And we've run scenes like this since first season, in which there is this dynamic between the average everyday encounter between a thinking cop and a thinking corner guy.
But does any of that matter when we roll up here? I get so much as a wave, a nod, a smile.
And the wit of the thing. And it's something that the mythology of TV always misses. You know, it's always like a war, and then the bad guys are bad and the good guys are good.
That wasn't so hard, was it?
We're always going...
It's about your reputation, you know, and how you carry yourself.
Yeah.
Mr. Entrapment, how are you doing?
One of the things that I found was interesting when we went to do The Corner years ago as a research endeavor was there were a lot of people who remembered you, even from time in the Western or when you were in Escape Squad. You went out at Monroe and Fayette, and by and large, very quickly, it was ascertained. They believed you when you said you had retired at that point. You were no longer a police officer. But they also, there was no history of complaint or that, you know, you'd been unfair or that you'd been brutal. You carried a benign reputation into it. It was very interesting. Because they know the cops they don't like by name.
Well, it's important to connect with the people because they have the information. And you can't do it if you're collegial. You can if you're the new Carver.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really a divorce between one mindset and the other there. Our political storyline this year, which sort of culminated in the election... This is really the hard work of Bill Zorzi, who is one of the Sun's premier political correspondents and, you know, has been on the political beat for maybe five, six election cycles at least.
Stella late for the Gay Lesbian Alliance.
Them seniors, they talk slow.
Bullshit.
And he really got the vernacular, not only in his own head, but he gave as much of it as he could to the other writers. And we really worked hard on it.
Yeah. It's the subtleness that he brought to it, the back room. Yeah,
the back room.
The frustration of the campaign.
Hey, is that polling data?
Raw numbers. It's incomplete. Right now, you need to be in the call room dialing for dollars.
Oh, fuck!
I've had politicians who, as soon as I encounter them, they talk about these scenes about the call room and having to dial for fundraising. And they all shake their heads and go, it's the worst thing you ever have to do. It's the worst part of the job. And these sequences resonated with them because it was their world. You never see it anywhere else.
No, and Aiden carries it off brilliantly. I just...
He does.
I know you don't have any use for fucking politicians, and frankly, I don't give a flying fuck about what you think or what your concerns are. But I do care about what your cute little blonde wife thinks about so many things. But, Jim, the reason I'm calling is because I want you to write me out a check for $4,000, the maximum allowed by law. And because we don't trust you to actually
this
mail
is our
that
political
check, we're
system.
Send over a couple of furloughed DPW workers to beat the check out of you.
All finished? You need $30,000 in the next 3 hours.
I would die in that room.
Yeah, so would I.
Die in this room.
Nice wallpaper.
Nice room.
Yeah, really. What don't you like to see when we do violence, and what makes you feel as if it's an appropriate display of violence in the show? I'm really curious to hear, you know, you talk about that, Ed, because I find sort of depicting violence problematic on one level, on an intellectual level. You know, emotionally it's very gratifying to the story, but it's tricky, isn't it?
And it's not a tube?
It's very tricky because, you know, you can overdo it. And I think what we've been able to do is to pick our violence, stage it in such a way it's right for the characters, and it's different. There's a twist to it. There's something there that makes it less graphic and more of something you can understand. Oh, I see why he did that. You know,
yeah.
Even Lex in this scene, you know, with the girlfriend. It's, you know, the little line at the end, you know. Pretty powerful.
Yeah. I like when violence, you can't always do it, and sometimes violence needs to be ornate because that's the way the scene works. But I like it when it's abrupt, when it's disturbingly abrupt, when you're not playing the ballet of it, so to speak.
That would be abrupt.
That would be abrupt.
What's up, Patrice?
And his line takes a little bit of the edge off.
Right. Right, and you're very ambivalent about even enjoying that.
I'm making the calls, Terry. I don't know what to say. Nobody's home.
30,000, Tommy.
We don't use a lot of jump cut sequences.
You mean Lex? The boy used to
but every now and then.
Lester!
We tried to do a jump cut sequence where all of his time in the call room was one scene. Yeah. And we realized that sort of fights the way The Wire is, this sort of minute-by-minute quotidian story. And so we ended up cutting it up.
It feels better this way. You know, the agony of it is stretched out.
Right. You stretch the agony out.
And what about your wife? Think she can come up with four? Kids?
They're in strollers.
I know they're in strollers. I was kidding.
No, you weren't.
Yeah, never mind. 4,000 is good. Thanks.
One to the left temple. Close range and a lot full of club trash, but of course nobody sees a thing. Mm.
We hear your shooter goes by Lex.
Lex?
We were up on your victim's cell phone, too. We'll go back through the call, send you what he is.
Yeah, you know, Lester's got some Harry in him.
He does.
Real estate.
He does.
Or Harry's got some Lester in him, one way or the other.
Go the other way.
Sorry.
Yeah, I know he does.
And I guess we're coming to one of the great ad-libs. I cannot take credit for this line. No, none of the writers can on the walk away.
Look at that bow-legged motherfucker. I made him walk.
That's all Wendell. I can't teach that one in film school when I teach the writing, you know. When I have the writing seminar, I have to give it up. I didn't write that. It was just too perfect.
Well, the important thing is it got in. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, who the fuck is Lex? Dontrell's cousin. Used to be with Kintel's people. He work with some corn over the hilltop now.
It's amazing what Jamie can bring to a scene with a couple of lines. Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a restrained performance. There is one scene in the fifth season, I'll tease it just a little bit, where he's required to get genuinely angry and upset. And it's so shocking and so real and so obvious that he has lost control, because the entire performance has been modulated almost towards that one moment. It reminds me of the first time that Lance Reddick gave sort of an open-ended smile. You know, I think that was late in season one, and, you know, it really shows you the restraint in some of these performances.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
He did win a verse, so he got the fall.
He couldn't go with where the Barksdales had went, and this was a great alternative.
Mm-hmm. I have a story about that last scene, which is that while we were filming, a lot of the guys in background there were real sort of Baltimore guys. And I got in a conversation with Benga Akinabe, plays Chris, and we realized we had gone to the same elementary school in Montgomery County. And we started talking in animated tones about the wonderful PE teacher down there, Mr. Conti, and did you have Mrs. Yoshizawa? And, you know, he's younger than me, but there were some teachers that actually spanned that time. And all of a sudden, I could see him losing the respect of all the real Baltimore guys for having gone to school with me. They had discounted him as being somehow false for even sharing any kind of background with me.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever recovered in their eyes.
Well, it's a shame because he had a tough upbringing. He really did. Yeah.
Yeah. He did. It was actually, yeah, he rescued himself in a lot of ways.
The Terrace Boys Bank, they coming across the tracks over there by Ramsey Street. To Ron, Manny, Herbie. Man, all them Terrace niggas.
They can't whoop on Dookie like that.
Yeah, I know. Only we can whip on Dookie like that.
You gotta step it up. Even this up.
Nah, fuck even. We gonna hurt them twice as bad. Give them a whoop-ass they ain't gonna never forget.
So if we straight up fight them, it's as many of them as it is us. More even.
So what you saying, you scared?
No, I'm just saying, if we're gonna hurt them, we need to think on it. Do something go past beating on each other.
You talking guns and shit.
No, I ain't talking guns.
Mm. I love their faces.
Maestro's smile, yeah.
What? Oh, shit.
Yeah, and you watch them age. In the 6 months we were filming, they really do come in as children, and they sort of slide out as young men.
They do. I think that speaks a lot about casting the right age for the right performance, rather than going older.
Right. We had to go for this age for a lot of reasons, one of which is, you know, as you pointed out, it might even be a little younger in reality, the key years to capture this kind of story, but this was the edge of what was credible, and it meant going for young actors. And, you know, yeah, that the way they grew in this season is just...
300,000. Great. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, it was one of those magical seasons, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember, you know, a lot of nervousness, four new actors, very young, seasons in their hands. By the time we finished filming this episode, we knew we were fine. We knew we were okay.
Credit goes to Robert Chu for working with them. Our proposition, Joe.
That's right. Yeah, Robert, who is involved in the theater company in Baltimore and works with kids, young actors. We really designated him to work with the four kids. And Ed, you attended those, right? You were pretty much there for every single rehearsal.
I was, and the magic, I think, started with Tristan being the one who was willing to embrace the others. When that happened, they formed a unit, and they just supported each other. It was just a wonderful thing to see.
All I love Aiden's transition from ranting in the car to now I'm on stage.
Good to see you again. I had a meeting go long, but
I love both ends of his character. I mean, I really enjoy that he vents in the car and it's very real, and then, okay, now it's time to do my job.
That's right, yeah.
The first thing I want you to take a look at.
So you gotta drink a lot. Think about the water running. And that way, you know, you can
feel
it.
How the fuck you know what water running be like, dude? Water been off of your house since last year.
Oh, yeah, man, that was cold.
Heck, Neyman, that's cold. Again, they're childlike in the beginning. Yeah, that's how I'd pick it up.
Can't go with niggas.
It's Nathan Corbett as Donut. Good local actor.
When do we call?
I guess that's too much like right.
Well, truth is, Royce won't let the city agencies take any of my constituent calls.
That was a nice lead.
That was great. The effective use of the hip.
Yo.
This was our one concession to keep the kids recognizable, know who you were watching, is we were about to have a fight sequence. And so we needed to play a little bit of colors with the white T-shirts, black T-shirts. Otherwise, you just met these kids a few scenes ago. You were not going to be able to track it very well. So we had to go with dark versus light.
Good versus evil.
Good versus evil, right.
Yeah, I'm fucking saying, bitches.
What you mean, bitches?
Don't ever disrespect terms.
Uh-oh. I hate when that happens. Joe Chappelle, who directed this episode, had a wonderful time with this. I thought he did great. He strung so much together to make it feel like the disarray of one of these things. You know, the geometry of something like this is so much fun for a good director.
It is. And it stays in that, still in that childhood thing up until this point here where it gets a little bit...
Right.
It's not our childhood. Somebody else's. Yeah.
Right. Somebody else's childhood.
Remember that phrasing is a cornerstone.
And now I think the wire's about to be a little bit sarcastic. Ed, how many of these did you sit through?
I was there for at least 7 years of them.
They all had different acronyms?
They did, and different ideas and different lies that always disappear at the end of the year. But the energy was, you know, and the little booklets they gave you were great.
Once again.
I-A-L-A-C.
She was perfect.
I am lovable.
We do this before the writer meetings at the Wire, don't we?
It's a lift.
I am lovable. Yeah. We all hold hands and IALAC.
Typical soft target locations. An officer alert to the terrorist threat must ask himself, do I know the location of my soft targets? Those were large.
There's a whole industry out there that does nothing but come up with this stuff and, you know, gives you a little notebook
right.
And goes around and makes lots
there's
of money.
There's money in it. there's money in it.
Where children tend to congregate. And
I had a pencil sharpener in my class once. Antoine Grandison ripped it from the wall and threw it at me.
Uh-oh, it's rebellion.
Plan suggests when Harold Hounshell sends a full set of textbooks through a closed window. Thank you.
Attention. Attention, people.
And Prez is wondering, what have I done?
For emergency procedures in the event of biochemical agents, you can refer to Appendix B.
No disrespect to your appendix. But if them terrorists do fuck up the Western, could anybody even tell?
Milkaders were up on Baltimore Street planning on blowing up the chicken joint. But Apex's crew jacked them up, took the camels and robes, bare their...
I know one of the things you enjoyed doing throughout The Wire, Ed, was dropping in these slight references. You know, the only people in Baltimore would get it, would get a reference like Apex, right?
That's right.
It doesn't hurt us with viewers outside, you know, if they don't get the joke, but, you know, and by the way, most people in Baltimore don't know who Apex is, but if you're in a particular milieu, that name lands.
He was one of the premier stick-up guys in West Baltimore back in the 70s and early 80s.
I caught one.
Yeah.
Got a street dealer by the name of Lex. Lester heard it on the
wire. It's fun playing with the names. Because you know somewhere somebody's giggling.
You know this mutt? Goes by Lex? He's familiar. You know who you should ask? Carver. He's not in the job, no. All right, Carver it is. I still feel the need to pull your coat.
For what?
A taste, Jimmy. A taste. How about you and me?
Bunk has horns on his head.
Our favorite spots. You know me on the Glenlivet, you on the Jamie?
Well, he's on the right side, isn't he? On the left shoulder, where the devil should be.
For dinner. Say hey to Beattie and the ankle biters.
And then this is the other thing we try to do every now and then in a season, which is, you know, bury a joke and use it later. So Santangelo throws out the binder. McNulty saves it for back to school. And then a few episodes later, you see Beattie Russell's kids using the binder. And it's barely commented on. If you catch it, you catch it. If you don't, sorry. Keep trying to keep up.
That's right. That's the joy of doing this. Lots of layers.
Yo, Michael, they got you?
Ain't nothing but a scuffle, man. Everybody made it back, though, right?
Nah, my teeth had to go to bone schools for stitches. You got hit with a brick.
The things that make me smile are these small little authenticities, the turkey in the straw song coming out of the ice cream truck, which you hear all over West Baltimore. I mean, that thing has lasted for generations. I mean, I remember hearing it the second day I was a police reporter in Baltimore in the 80s, you know, and not knowing what it was and then seeing the truck come and, you know, can't go out there on a summer day and not hear it somewhere.
So you get out all right?
Yeah. Hurt my ankle going around the corner, but
this is a great moment for
assumptions of rap and hip hop, and you needed to strip that away. And that's what you were looking for in the kids?
Yeah, that's what we were looking for. When you get on this level, there's very little rap and gangster that you see, because this is too far down the pole.
I don't have your vote, Norman.
The kids are much more real,
right?
And I think that we did a great job. I think Alexa did a phenomenal job of finding these kids and making them real.
I thought you just said
I was speaking in general about the kindly nature of
black. Yeah, well, Alexa and Pat, Jermaine was a local. Jermaine was a local hire, but yeah, we read a lot of kids.
Well, I do know who pays me. Y'all saw? Oh, y'all supposed?
A lot of kids came in with the affectation of music videos, of hip-hop, and the hat sideways and the jewelry. You know, I'll do your scene for you, but now I'll do one of my raps. And we weren't looking for that, were we?
Don't make me tell you again. It's 9 sharp, boy. And I'm smelling what has to be urine. What you
the effect of it, right? That's right.
So, we were playing with Dookie today. You know how it be.
Mm-hmm. Good lie.
Well, it's good that child has friends, I suppose.
Yes, ma'am.
That's salesmanship.
He's got it.
Come on, Dougie. I know it's late, but I gotta come back door like this, or the agencies won't.
See, this is all Bill Zorzi. The idea that a guy steps out to challenge an incumbent, and the incumbent shuts down his ability to achieve anything in his job as a councilman, so he can't do constituent service, so he has to call people he knows in the agencies and beg. It's something that, unless you've covered politics for 20 years, you know, maybe you could assume it, but you're not going to think about it.
Exactly.
You're not going to think about it. You're not going to think about it the moment that you're charged with writing a script. Tank trap. Great, thanks. Love to Denise. It's really about knowing what you know and what you don't know.
I think that's exactly it. You got to know the world. If not, it becomes television. you know.
That's right.
You sort of fudge it.
That's right.
But
put political crap here, you know. Put right. medical
crap,
crap here. Put,
yeah.
Put cops. Yeah, cop crap here. It's all. And then let's play the love story. But the cop crap is fascinating if you sort of get into it and figure out what they're doing or not doing, and the medical stuff is interesting, and politics is interesting, and you know how the port works, and how kids are on a corner. That's the fun stuff. Those are the worlds that we don't really occupy.
Yeah, that's the big kick we got when we did the corner was the attic saying, "You got it right." You know, it's much better than the critic. It's the person who knows the world.
Yeah. You know, you can't write to the average viewer or the average reader. You got to write to the people in the event and hope that you
so
can not shame yourself in front of them.
This is you.
If you get over with them, if they see portions of the world, you're going to be okay with critics and viewers. They're going to go with you because it feels credible, because it is on some level.
Right.
If you're not able to fool the people living the event with your artifice, then where are you really going?
And it's all in the detail. The little small moves and stuff like that,
yep.
People, the expert picks up on.
What's up?
Yeah.
What's up, man? I got orders from the Koreans today at a discount. When school start, I'll be selling it for 3 times that.
Tell you what, let me get them Skittles.
By the end of the run, that house will have 5 or 6 campaign signs on it. Maybe more. That's a local actor, Terrell Baker, playing little Kevin. I thought he did a wonderful job. He was kind of an acting novice. He got the part on The Merits with a great read, and then he really settled into that part, brought a lot of humanity to a supporting role. And I get a real kick out of the actors from the Baltimore, Washington area who really step up and show the pool of people that we really do have here. You know, we've had some people who've walked in with very little experience, and they've managed to convey an awful lot over the years. Terrell's one of them. See, there's nice parts of Baltimore.
Nice part of Baltimore. I think that's where Bill Zorzi grew up, right?
Yeah, I think that's the neighborhood. That might be the house. Is there a plaque out front?
Hey, Norman.
This is another, again, we love doing stuff like this. When he finds the shoe that he dropped the night before and just has to toss it to her, sort of without explanation. It's a joke that maybe 20% of the people get, but hey, you know.
Four more weeks, Jen. Quality time with the wife and kids. It was what, 4 minutes?
More like 6.
6? Shit, I could have got laid.
Self-effacing is good. And how is it, Ed, that you've managed to take this sweet-tempered young girl with her dreads, little skinny thing, and turn her into an object of absolute terror? How did you manage to do that?
I don't take any credit for that at all. That's what she brought to the game. What did Stephen King call her? The most frightening...
Her and Chris, the most frightening killers... terrifying killers ever.
Yeah, I think those two are very frightening. and both of them very nice people.
He was here earlier.
Yeah, fuck it, we'll come wonderful back, people. But man, what they've managed to convey in those roles. This scene was shot in a driveway in one of the nicest areas of the city. We had to find something over near Federal Hill because we were using the park for another scene. And lo and behold, we managed to find one little shred of Riverside Avenue that looked like it could be in West Baltimore.
You do like I said?
Yeah.
Yeah, you must have. Because the nigga went up the block. He ain't never coming back down. Chris and Snoop. Pow.
What?
The hardest part of acting is reacting, and Maestro has it.
What a weight to carry for a kid.
Yeah.
My heroes back from the wars.
Those poll numbers tallied up yet?
Not too bad either. Roy's 35, you 26, Gray 20. 19% undecided.
We're fucked if we haven't moved any more than that. I need to be at 30, and I need Tony taking 25 at this point.
Royce's negatives are way up. Like what, 34% unfavorable to 43% favorable?
He's vulnerable.
Jerry, understand this. In order to win, I need Tony Gray to take a huge bite out of Royce's lead. Huge. Tony's moved
some traction in West Baltimore.
Yeah, he needs to be rounding 25.
Ultimately, all the stuff about teaching this season, it really was your season in every sense. You know, none of us had any concept of what you were trying to convey in the beginning. You had to relate all of that in terms of what you'd been through for those 7 years.
I think we did a lot of research as a group, and it all came out in the wash.
I've been ahead further than Royce is and lost.
You know, it makes me angry about the No Child Left Behind stuff as the latest fraud and the latest acronym. I was vaguely angry about it, reading it sort of distantly as a policy issue. Doing this season, I'm kind of furious.
The man can read a poll.
It's a national crime. And we'll pay for it.
So the if animal trapped becomes perfect as metaphor. Joe Chappelle found this location. It's near Greenmount Cemetery. These sort of white stone row houses that in every sense suggest tombstones as they walk away. It's an incredible location. And when we pull back to the wide, you get it.
Look at those two.
I know. Yeah. You know, that's a graveyard. And turning out the light, it's just, what a shot by Joe.
Now, speaking of authentic Baltimore voices, Jimmy.
Yeah,
Rude.
That's right. It's our tech advisor, Major Rude, of the actual Baltimore Police Department.
I'm fine.
Playing a Southern District patrolman.
Fine somewhere else. Park curfew is midnight.
City's averaging a murder a day, and here you are with wreck and park rules.
What are you, a smart ass?
Yeah. Look, he got that. You know, normally you get a nightstick to the side of the head, right, Ed?
at least cuffs.
Don't I know you?
I'm running for mayor. Tommy Carchetti, 1st District.
I'll be coming back through at about 20, councilman. Do me a favor.
I did a nice job with that. Yeah.
Yep. He did. I think he's rousted people before.
I think a couple.
And then, thank God for this shot. Remember, we were going to end on this shot until we conceived of the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And the transition of using the siren and marrying the siren you hear at the end of this shot to this.
There's a kid who's got a nail in the coffin of his childhood already.
Yep. This is when you know it might not be the happiest season of The Wire. But it was certainly one of the best. And I credit those kids.
Yeah, they did a fantastic job. True win. Good start. Good start.
Yeah. Hopefully we keep it going. I don't know. What happens next, Ed? Well, I guess they'll have to put it in that little shiny disc. Oh, this has been David Simon and
Ed Burns.
We are the writers, producers, and general troublemakers behind The Wire on HBO.
Yeah, stay safe.
Stay safe. All right. Be more careful.